Okay, then it looks like we should move along to Todd Morgan.
Todd, and as you get ready, I will give you 15, 10 minutes, and 5 minute warnings via chat, just so I will help you keep on time.
That sounds good. Thank you, Peter.
You're welcome.
I'll hit share screen and I should be ready to roll here. All right, good afternoon all, and thank you to Andrew, and thank you to the board for this opportunity to present. We've been working on these projects, the Harvested Wood Products project and the Sawmill Energy. They're two separate projects, but we've been working on them for about 3 years, and it's good to see them wrapping up. And hopefully I present this summary in a way that's meaningful and useful for the board and stakeholders. So first thing I'd like to do is I need to thank our sponsors. The FIA program supports my unit, the Bureau of Business and Economics research on ongoing mill surveys, logging utilization study in the PNW states, which has made this Harvested Wood Products and Sawmill Energy research possible. And then, of course, I want to thank Oregon Department of Forestry for their sponsoring of the HWP and the Sawmill Energy projects in Oregon in particular. Also want to thank Jeremy Groom of Groom Analytics. He recoded the Harvested Wood Products model that we're using into R, got some bugs out of it, and helped provide more documentation on how that model works. I also want to thank Nate Anderson from Rocky Mountain Research Station, who was really the originator of a lot of this work, and then Tom Donahue, Tala Dillon, Eric Simmons here at BBR, who helped me with actually doing the analysis. Now, the BBR, we're the research branch of the University of Montana's College of Business. We do a lot of Oregon-related timber products, output work, TPO work. You can see on the left side there some summaries from our mill surveys, what years we've done them in the past, starting in 03, some results there from the 2017, the most recent one that's in press at PNW. And then we have our logging residue or logging utilization studies there on the right. We did one in Oregon and Washington. The field work was from 2011 to 2015. And that, again, is helping contribute to some answers here about harvested wood and carbon questions for this work for ODF. A little bit of background about the multiple efforts from multiple teams that have gone into this. I mentioned already the original Harvested Wood Products model developed by Nate Anderson, Keith Stockman. That's a Forest Service-led team. Folks from Utah State, University of Montana worked on that. And they did that for the Forest Service, for national forest lands in particular. Then, we've been doing these ongoing mill surveys and TPO work in the Pacific states for FIA since about 2000. And Glenn mentioned their forest ecosystem carbon work began around 2008. And then some different iterations and variations of the model that we're using. And then the most recent rewrite was by Jeremy Groom and with the help of Andrew Yost and others to make sure that it is fully functional and helps answer the questions that we have. Now, this work is closely related to the forest ecosystem work that Glenn presented. Most harvested wood carbon is not emitted at the time it is cut from the forest. But what the Harvested Wood Products study does is it complements that ecosystem analysis. It looks at harvested carbon, and we're looking at it through what I call these four fates. And they're these kind of rainbow-colored boxes across the top there, the yellow, the purple, the pink, and the orange. And I will say that, however, the data from the ecosystem carbon report was not the input into the Harvested Wood Products model. That's separate, and I'll walk through here what we use as inputs. You can see here the model framework. This was originally built for and by the Forest Service. And there are three data sets, the one, two, three, that go in there. And the first is an annual timber harvest volume, annual time series of timber harvest. And then the second is timber product ratios, or that's basically the proportions of timber each year that's harvested by category. So think saw logs versus pulp wood versus fuel wood versus other miscellaneous kind of products. And then the third data set that gets loaded in is these primary product ratios. And that you can think of that as the It's the mix of products and residue uses that come out of the primary processors. So you think saw logs go into sawmills. Roughly half of what comes out of the sawmill is lumber. The other half is residue, and then that residue might, some of it might be used for pulp and paper, or some might be used for particle board, some might be burned for energy, and some might go to, say, landscaping material. So that's the idea of what a primary product ratio is. The model was designed as a carbon storage model, not an emissions model, but it does track the carbon emitted from the harvested wood. And I'll make that point a couple of times so that people don't get confused, but the actual, what we're looking at is the wood in the logs that go to the mill, and then what happens to that wood downstream, so to speak. So the specific data sets here, the annual timber harvest series we used came, Andrews and Katara as a document that went, I think back to the 1800s, but it actually had lumber production as mixed in with timber harvest. Then ODF has maintained a timber harvest time series in the state of Oregon for quite a while, and we use that data in conjunction with our mill surveys quite a bit. The timber product ratios and the primary product ratios came from Oregon mill studies. And you can see the years listed here for those Oregon mill studies that we used. The three highlighted there in the maroon are ones that BBR has conducted since 2003. And then in that shaded box at the bottom, those are the examples of other parameters in the model that include, you know, wood to carbon conversion estimates, product half-lives, product end uses, fuel wood emitted, energy capture, discarded products. Those came out of the literature a lot by Ken Skog and McKeever from the Forest Products Lab, those folks. All right, so timber harvest is the main input into this model. Here's the harvest time series for the state of Oregon going back to 1906. And you can see from 1906 to 61, is all ownerships are kind of grouped together. There was some ownership detail available here, but it wasn't consistent. There were different groupings of owners through time, which made it complicated and really messy to work with. So what we did is, for the analysis by owner, we used 1962 through 2017. And that's all the different colors there. The green's the Forest Service, yellow's the BLM, blue is state and other municipalities, black's tribal, and then orange is the private. And I won't make any jokes about college colors and teams here, but you can imply that. Then, this figure represents Oregon's timber product output, which is essentially the timber harvest volume year by year in the red line there, expressed in million metric tons of carbon. And that's the annual time series, is that red line off the left-hand scale is where you read it. And then the black line is the cumulative TPO. So this is all the timber that has been harvested in Oregon since 1906. And you can see it's red off the right scale, and the cumulative amount that's been harvested as of the end of 2017 was about 814 million metric tons of carbon. I'll add here that the average annual TPO number, so the average annual harvest for the last 10 years in this time series, is about 6.7 million metric tons of carbon. And the which is about 70 to 75% of the average annual cut from the FIA analysis. FIA's cut number is about 9.5 million metric tons of carbon for that average across their time period. Now, this graph is going to show the amount of carbon that's in the wood and that is still stored. And we have it stored in two broad fates or categories. One is products in use, and the other is called wood that's in solid waste disposal sites. And you can see a couple things on this graph. The products in use, it's still increasing, though not tremendously. The total for products in use as of 2018, so the year after the time series of harvest ended, is about 57% of the total harvested wood product stock, whereas solid waste disposal sites, the total there is about 42%. And that total harvested wood products carbon stored, I think I have one more click here to give you, there you go, is about 351 million metric tons of carbon from all the timber that's been harvested since 1906. That's what is still stored either in products, you know, think paper on your desk, boards in the wall, you know, cool wood things on your shelf. And the pink is all the stuff that's in landfills and dumps. Now this graph is showing that carbon storage, again, that it's the products in use and the solid waste disposal sites combined, but it's showing it by ownership class. So basically by the ownership that was associated with the timber that went into it. And this is, again, it goes from just the 1962 harvest through the end of the time series. And ownerships contribute to this total storage roughly in proportion to their cumulative TPO by the ownership. I can see the top here, private, and then working down through the different ownerships. One thing to point out is I can see here in the green how this is Forest Service, and this is flat to actually declining slightly in the most recent years. It's a similar trend here with the BLM HWP storage. It's flat to declining somewhat in the most recent years. And that's a result of the declining harvest levels that we saw in the 1990s as federal lands began cutting much less than they were, say, in the 1960s to the 80s. And by contrast, you can see that private, certainly can see it here, is continuing to rise in terms of the total HWP still stored. And it's also for state lands here in the blue, that is also continuing to grow as private and state harvests have remained relatively constant, actually growing somewhat in compared to past levels. Now here again, we have the carbon that is stored by these ownership classes. I had to group a few of them together to make a couple points here, but private and tribal, they represent about 61% of total harvested wood products carbon stored from that 1962 to 2017 period. The feds are about a third, state and local together are about 5%. The last column in this table shows these harvested wood products ownership totals as a percent of their respective ownerships ecosystem totals. So for example, private and tribal total harvested wood products carbon still stored is about 18% of their 981 million metric tons of carbon that's in the ecosystem. One point I'd like to draw out here at the bottom, there's two rows. There's the sum of all owners for the ownership period, which is 62 to 17. That represents about 9% of the total ecosystem carbon, or it's equivalent to 9% of the ecosystem carbon. Whereas if we use the time series all the way back to 1906 for all ownerships, it's actually closer to 11% of, or equivalent to 11% of the total ecosystem carbon that we still have stored in wood products. And so that's about 18% higher. And I think that's an important point, that the longer the harvest time series is, the more information it gives us about how much carbon from harvested wood products is really still stored. Now this figure shows the annual change in the products in use pool, which is the purple pool, and the annual change in the solid waste disposal sites, which is that pink. And then it also shows the net change of the two together. And so three points I wanna make here. One is that the net change is positive across all years. So this black line, as it goes across here through time, remains above zero. Despite the fact that we see the products in use pool, these purple bars, there are a few years in the time series, 1933 here during the Great Depression, and then here during the mid and late 90s as national forest harvest was greatly declining, and again here during the Great Recession when timber harvest went way down. But those products in use, we see a few negative years, and that basically means that there's more carbon moving out of that product in use pool than is moving into it through new harvest. And when that carbon moves out of the product and use pool, it typically moves into the solid waste disposal. Some of it's emitted, most of it moves into solid waste disposal sites. And then the third point I want to make here is that the solid waste disposal site, the net change in that pool is positive every year. That means more waste wood is moving into solid waste disposal, mostly from products in use, than is being emitted out of dumps and landfills each year. So that solid waste disposal site, the net change is positive in 2017. It's 1.7 million metric tons here, the pink bar at the very end, whereas the net change for the products in use pool is just about, it's 0.64 million metric tons. But the big takeaway is that the harvested wood products pool as a total is still net positive. It's accruing more carbon than it's losing. Right, now, going back to that original diagram of the model, there's the four fates we mentioned for harvested wood products carbon. And this graph is going to show you what's happened in those pools over this time frame. So here's our products in use pool. It's grown gradually since 1907, or harvest beginning in 1906. There's a solid waste disposal site pool. It's also growing. This is emitted without energy capture. So this is in carbon equivalents. Everything here is in million metric tons of carbon so that we can add it all together. It's 308 million metric tons of carbon emitted to date without energy capture from harvested wood products. And then the final series in this is emitted with energy capture. So this is essentially emissions from burning fuel wood. And that's both industrial fuel wood use and residential fuel wood use. And so the bottom two are the stocks, and these top two are basically the pools that have been emitted so far. And I want to point out one more thing here is that the total across time is equal to 814 million metric tons of carbon, which is the total of the timber product output for that entire time frame. So basically, the model is keeping track of all the carbon that's ever been harvested in the logs and what's happened to it to date. And this is one of the bugs that Jeremy helped fix, because earlier iterations of the model were losing tiny bits of carbon through time. So the fates weren't adding up to the total timber product output. But that's now been fixed. Yay. All right. The next piece here I want to go over is the uncertainty analysis that went along with the harvested wood products storage and emissions. And we used Monte Carlo simulations. And what I'll show you here are the estimates for the four pools, the four fates. So the top two here entered, emitted without energy capture or with and without energy capture. The bottom two are the pools that are products in use and solid waste disposal sites. And the yellow line through the middle is the estimate, it's the mean. And then the black shadow around it represents the 90% confidence interval based on 2000 simulations and various attributes in the model that are adjusted year to year to understand kind of what the precision of these estimates are. And then this figure on the right represents the total harvested wood products carbon pool. So that's basically the four rainbows stacked on top of each other and with its corresponding confidence interval, 90% confidence interval. And so you can see that's 351 million metric tons of harvested wood products carbon that's still stored, plus or minus 85 million metric tons as of 2018, the last data year. Last harvest year was 17, and then it's calculated as to what was remaining in 2018. This table is just a real simple summation of everything so far. The cumulative TPO so far is 814 million metric tons. That's how much carbon is in the wood that's gone to mills. You can see the cumulative storage here by the two different pools and the total for the total harvested wood products stock or pool. And then you can see the cumulative emissions here, again, all in million metric tons of carbon, so that we can look at this total number and see, okay, 43% is still stored, and about 47 and 52% that has been emitted. And this table shows the cumulative and annual emissions from harvested wood products in million metric tons of CO2 equivalents. So for folks that want to compare emissions in CO2e, which is typically how they're reported, this is what we have here. Again, this only includes the emissions from the carbon that is actually in the wood, not from energy associated with harvesting or hauling or milling the wood. And these emissions from the wood are through decay. When we're talking about the emitted without energy capture, that's things like decay or in landfills or dumps or composting, and also if it's being burned without any kind of energy capture. And then emitted with energy capture is basically the fuel wood. And you can see that this what's coming out of landfills, dumps, composting is about, well, it's quite a bit bigger than what's coming out of emitted with energy capture, about 10 times, 9.5 times bigger. This is a good bit of carbon emissions that's not being used. I think this is one aspect of the model that will probably be updated. It can be updated with information to help quantify how much disposed wood or paper is actually being used for energy from the, like, that municipal waste end of the equation, so to speak. Whether it's diverted from landfills and burned for energy, or whether it's captured, you know, like methane or other kinds of emissions that are captured from landfill emissions and used for energy. This is that emitted without energy capture is a piece of the model I think that can be improved in the future. And I think it's also an indication of harvested wood products utilization, what's going on with it way downstream from the forest. So not at the forest or the harvest level or at the primary processing stage, but really at its disposal stage, the municipal solid waste kind of perspective on wood recovery, wood reuse and recycling after it's thrown away. All right, now I'm gonna, this is kind of a hard break in the talk. I'm gonna shift to the sawmill energy study and the emissions. Sawmill energy and emissions analysis. And this study examines on-site or on-site, depending what kind of accent you like, energy use by sawmills in Oregon during 2017 and the emissions associated with that energy use. We did similar energy studies for California in 16, for Arizona, Colorado, New Mexico in 2012. And for Montana in 2009, although Montana's analysis did not have the emissions component. So see, there's some facts here about Oregon's timber harvest and their timber lands. Here's a map of where the mills are located in the state. There are 75 sawmills that were active in Oregon during 2017. Out of the 166 total timber processors, 75 of those were sawmills. Those sawmills used about 60% of Oregon's total timber harvest went to sawmills, 61%. So as part of BBR's work for FIA, we do these periodic censuses of mills, and in Oregon during 2017, we did it, and there were 75 sawmills, and we sent a sawmill energy consumption survey to each of those 75 mills. We incorporated our 2011-2015 logging residue information in this analysis. And then we use, of course, a variety of published energy content and emissions factors from EPA, the EIA, Forest Products Lab, and others. The energy consumption surveys asked each sawmill for all the quantities of fuels, of all the different fuels that they used on site. So within the fence, so to speak, of the mill. So fuels for equipment, that would include things like their rolling stock or generators, and we asked how much diesel, gasoline, propane they used. The non-electric heat and steam sources, so things like wood, natural gas, heating oil, whatever they were using or burning for heat and steam at the plant. And then we asked about their electricity, whether they produced any, whether they got it off the grid, if they got it from the grid, who their utility or their electricity provider was. And so again, this is all and only on-site energy consumption. We did not include energy or fuel that was consumed during harvesting or transporting of logs to the mill. And we classified each fuel source as either being renewable or non-renewable, fossil fuels and nuclear. Of course, we're non-renewable. We classified all the hydro, all the woody biomass as renewable. So for energy and emissions, basically we use the Energy Information Administration's energy contents for those, each of the fuel types. We used, and then we use for emissions, we use EPA and other literature about by fuel type, and we calculated emissions for these select or these select types of emission quantities of CO2, CH4, PM10, NOx, and SOx. And then we also, we used our logging utilization information to develop mill-specific estimates of the logging residue that was associated with the timber volume used by each sawmill. And it averages about 1.9 green tons of logging residue per MBF Scrivener that's harvested. BVR's 2011 to 2015 Oregon and Washington logging to util study went into this. And then we used, again, values from the literature about moisture content, higher heating values for wood species that were harvested. All right, so getting into the results. 30 of the 75 mills gave us energy info, that's 40% response rate, but those 30 mills accounted for 59% of Oregon's 2017 lumber production. They used just under 1.4 billion board feet Scrivener of timber. That's roughly 57% of the volume used by all of Oregon's sawmills and 35% of Oregon's total 2017 timber harvest. Just to kind of give a more perspective other than just the response rate, but actually what that respondents represented in terms of lumber production in the state and timber harvest. So here we can see, excuse me, I'll get a drink of water. The energy consumption by the Oregon sawmills. The vast majority of it was from renewable sources, 80%. Wood was the largest fuel in terms of millions of BTUs or trillions of BTUs produced or used. Electricity made up the other 14% because roughly 14 of this 19 is electricity from hydroelectric sources. And so for that means for the 30 mills in the study, they used about 4.5 trillion BTUs of energy. If we scale that up based on this energy use per unit of lumber output, we actually see that all 75 mills in the state were estimated to use about 7.6 trillion BTUs of energy. I'm going to focus here on the Oregon results, that first column. Oregon has relatively low energy use per unit of lumber produced. You can see there compared to California, it's next door neighbor, both in the graph and in reality, that California, twice as much, again, this is on a per unit of lumber basis, twice as much diesel fuel consumed, about four times as much natural gas, and about almost four times as much wood and bark consumed. National figures here, looking at the total, the bottom line, national figures are in the neighborhood of 3,100 to 7,600 million BTUs per million board feet of lumber. But I would say that the national figures are based on different methodology. They may not be completely comparable, but it does help indicate that we're in the ballpark here across these different states that we're not totally off base. I would mention that Oregon's sawmill or lumber industry is the largest by far here. Oregon lumber production is like 2.75 times as big as California's. It's 12 times bigger than Montana's, and it's 50 times bigger than the three southwestern states added together. So I think there's some work, there's some benefits here in this that are going on from economies of scale with the size of the mills. I'll get into some other reasons for these differences too. Again, This helps point out sawmill energy use is dominated by wood, not just in Oregon, but in California and Montana, and not so much in the Southwest. They don't use much wood energy among the Southwest sawmills. In the U.S. as a whole, sawmills account for about half of U.S. wood products energy demand. 65% of U.S. wood products industry, their energy comes from wood bioenergy. And 58% of the energy for softwood lumber in the U.S. comes from wood bioenergy. And those are based off, those are kind of national level numbers from various studies. So why are Oregon and the Southwest sawmills, why do they have such relatively low energy use per unit of lumber? We think the major factor here is kilns and the amount of dried lumber. We tried to get data on Oregon from these Oregon mills about their kilns, about how much lumber they dried, but very few provided data on the amount of lumber that they actually dried during the year. We found some information from WWPA that indicated 52% of lumber in Oregon was sold green as opposed to dry. And basically that states with fewer kilns or with fewer mills using the kilns or a higher proportion of green lumber, you get less energy used overall, and certainly much less on the wood used for energy, because wood-fired kilns, wood-fired boilers that run the kilns are very, very common. Mills like to make use of their residue. In Oregon, there's also the factor that Oregon has very good markets for woody mill residue, pulp and board. And that's very different than, say, California, where much of California's mill residue is actually used for biomass energy production rather than for pulp or paper or particle board. Now, this graph is showing the fuel sources for electricity that came from the grid consumed by the mills in our study. Electricity, again, represented almost 20% of total Oregon sawmill energy. And you can see on this graph that renewables, particularly hydro, but wind and solar and waste wood, provided about 73% of the total electricity delivered to these sawmills. The top two fuel sources for electricity were hydroelectric, so 70%, and number two was coal at 14%. And as a Montana resident, I thank you for using electricity that comes from coal mined in Montana. It helps pay for my kids' school. All right, estimated emissions from on-site energy by Oregon sawmills. All right, so we're gonna shift here from the energy to the actual emissions that are associated with producing that energy or using it. We calculated the energy used from each mill, and then from the fuel sources, we calculated the carbon dioxide and these other emissions that were generated. You can see it in total tons or short tons, and then you can see it in tons per million board foot of lumber. And then we scaled that up to represent all the sawmills, and then we converted it to million metric tons so that we could talk about emissions in CO2 equivalents that are in million metric tons. And you can see here can't see it here, but by fuel type, hog fuel, woody biomass produces the most overall emissions and the largest shares of carbon dioxide, methane, and NOx, about 48% of NOx. Electricity was actually responsible for the largest shares of PM10 and SOx. And I think that's from the coal that's in the mix for electricity. And given the lower energy use per million board foot in Oregon, it's not super surprising, but emissions per million board foot were much lower in Oregon. They were only about a quarter of what they were in California. They were about half of what they were in the Southwest on a per MBF basis. And we didn't do emissions in Montana, so I can't give you a comparison to Montana. So then, as I mentioned, we estimated the logging residue that was generated during the harvest of the saw logs. Again, it was about 1.4 million board feet, Scrivener of logs, 1.4 billion board feet of logs used by these 30 sawmills. It roughly estimated about 2.6 million green tons of logging residue. And then assuming that this logging residue is burned in the forest, we can see here the CO2 emissions, CH4, PM10, et cetera. And then if we were to, instead of just burning that slash in the woods that were used for bioenergy, you can see that we would generate quite a lot, 28.7 trillion BTUs of energy. That's in the neighborhood of six times more energy than was used by all the sawmills in this study. But you can see that it actually may generate a little bit more CO2 emissions. We think that's because of more complete combustion going on when it's used for bioenergy than when it's burned outside. But you see reductions in these other types of emissions as a result, if it were to be used for bioenergy. The bottom line, literally here below the table, we can see that emissions from burning in the forest are equivalent to about 2.2 million metric tons of carbon dioxide. So that's just the carbon dioxide component. And about another 0.026 million metric tons of other selected emissions. So way smaller quantities of these other emissions. And looking at, you know, again, taking this into perspective, the 1.4 billion board feet Scrivener used by these 30 sawmills is roughly equivalent to 35% of Oregon's total 2017 timber harvest. And I don't know, it wasn't part of this study, and even though we tried to figure it out, we didn't have very much success. We don't exactly know how much of Oregon's logging residue is burned each year. That's a question that's kind of been plaguing not just Oregon, but California and other states, is understanding just how much of that logging residue does get burned in site prep and fuel reduction treatments and stuff like that after the harvest. All right, sawmill energy, some key points here I want to share, that regional and state differences are important, whether because of the geography, because of weather, because of climate, because of forest types, and policy. They all seem to be relevant factors that contribute to these differences. Moisture content in the wood, the markets for green versus dry lumber, and indeed the markets for mill residue, whether mills are able to profitably sell their mill residue, say for pulp and paper, or whether they are going to burn it as a way to save money on buying energy. There's a lot of variability in the lumber drying and the kiln use across the states and within a state and within a mill from year to year. And of course, there's differences in these local and regional power suppliers, whether or not or how much renewable electricity electricity providers are getting from renewable sources versus non-renewable. And in Oregon, you know, 84% of that sawmill energy came from renewables. Most of that was wood, and the difference was really the hydroelectric that was coming through the utility. Wood is the major energy and emission source. It accounted for 70% of the total sawmill energy used and 85% of total emissions, again, being dominated by the CO2 emissions. Substantial amounts of logging residue are associated with that timber that's used by sawmills. Again, we're not certain just how much or what proportion of mill residue, or excuse me, logging residue is burned each year. But some emissions from burned residue could be reduced with biomass utilization, but there's other trade-offs. And, you know, if policies, markets, and infrastructure were in place and logging residue emissions, you know, some logging residue emissions could be reduced, but those are big ifs. There's the capital expense of those systems. There's the expense of gathering, transporting, and using that slash. And then there's the emissions associated with those activities, the actual harvesting, the hauling, and processing. And there is relatively inexpensive fossil-based electrical alternatives. And in Oregon, you already have, I think, around 51% renewables in the statewide portfolio of electricity. So there's not a tremendous incentive there. And again, there's the markets for the mill residues as well, for pulp and paper and particle board. All right, now with that, I'd like to take I have like two slides left in about 2 minutes. I want to help put some of these numbers in context that I talked about from these two presentations, and then put it in context with some of what Glenn presented. So Glenn mentioned the forest ecosystem. Total carbon stock was about 3.2 billion metric tons of carbon. The portion of that that's in live and dead trees, the above ground portions of live and dead trees, is about 1.1 billion metric tons. And so then we have from our harvested wood products study, there's 351 million metric tons that are in products and use in solid waste disposal sites. So that's the harvested wood products pool. So that is truly a stock. Then we have these other two numbers here. So this is FIA's average annual cut number, which is about 9.5 million metric tons of carbon. And we have our 2017 annual TPO number from the HWP study, which is about 7 million metric tons of carbon. These are technically not stocks. but I wanted to show them in units of carbon so that you could get a sense of them in the same unit of measure as what's stored in the forest, what's in the live and dead parts of trees above ground, and what portion they represent of the total pool of harvested wood products that's hanging out there today. And then we have the fluxes. And so here, the FIA's average annual cut and the TPO, this is the same values. They're just expressed in CO2 equivalents rather than carbon. And so you can see they get about 3.6 times bigger when you do that. And that's why I thought it was important to kind of show them in the same unit of measure so you didn't get a disproportionate sense of their size. And there's my alarm. Okay, so then we have these other four findings from the HWP study, the solid waste disposal site, or emissions without energy capture. That's about 15 million metric tons. Burning slash, I just showed you, we estimated that about 2.2 million metric tons. Emitted with energy capture, so that's fuel wood being burned. That's a little over 1.5 million metric tons. And these are all 2017, so per year. And sawmill energy emissions came in at 500,000 metric tons of CO2 per year. So just to kind of put that in perspective. And then a little bit more here in context. I found a study, or Andrew actually sent this to me from ERG. It is their Oregon non-road diesel equipment survey and emissions inventory. So they estimated that for 2017, timber harvest and forest road construction produced 0.32 million metric tons CO2 equivalent of emissions. I calculated an estimate of timber haul emissions. So this is logs going from the forest to the mill, based on a study by Sean Healy and others. I was involved with that study too. It was done in Montana, but basically it looked at emissions from hauling logs per basically unit of log that was hauled. So however many tons of logs went to the mill, we looked at that and then came up with this estimate. It was, you know, between 0.5% and 1.7% of total hauled wood carbon CO or equivalent CO2 in logs. So that's about, for Oregon, that's about 0.3 million metric tons of CO2e that's associated with hauling emissions. And again, here's our sawmill energy emissions, the slash burning emissions estimate that I made. And you can see that slash burning estimate is much bigger than those other three potential emission sources. And again, so the sum of those together is about 3.3 million metric tons. Thinking about that in terms of the annual TPO, or the amount of logs that go to mills, they sum up to about 13% of the TPO volume, or the volume that goes to mills each year, or at least the 2017, and then, or roughly 10% of FIA's average annual cut volume. Or not volume, but CO2 equivalent. And with that, I thank you all for your time and your patience and your attentiveness. And I think I have time maybe for a question or two. I'll leave that up to other folks.
Just checking to see if we have any questions from board members. Yes, Brenda McComb.
Thank you. That was great. And thank you for those last few slides to put everything into context, especially with the harvest costs and transportation costs. The other question I had is, you did get those estimates for fossil fuel use and greenhouse gas emissions associated with harvest and some parts of transportation. But there are also fossil fuel expenditures associated with managing the forest to get to the point of harvesting. And I'm just wondering, is that something that could be included in these estimates as well?
That's a good point. I think it's something that could be included. We made no attempt to do that. That was outside the scope of what we were looking at, but I think it could be estimated how precisely or how accurately. That I don't know.
So. Yeah, good, thank you.
And one thing that might, to add a little bit of the context, I guess, is that, Oregon has adopted legislation that will result in reductions in the fossil fuel content of of electricity being provided in Oregon. It's phased in, but so in the out years, at least that's something worth looking at, and there's likely to be more action taken along those lines. But yeah, it was really interesting. Really appreciate your participation and taking the time to do this.
Hi, you're quite welcome. Thank you. It's a great opportunity to get to present to you all. Thank you.
So, board, we'll take a 5-minute break. 2:30. We'll come back at 2:35, and continue this with global carbon flex and forest considerations discussion.